When I was 7 years old, I made the decision to follow Jesus. And I remember that night so very clearly. It was me and my sister, and my grandmother was there with us. She was keeping us while my parents were off somewhere doing something awesome. And I remember she was putting us to bed. She loved to sing. She was not a very good singer, but she loved to make a joyful noise, and she took that literally. And so she loved singing, and so she would sing hymns to us. And so that night as she was putting us to bed, she began to sing the hymn, and it said, "He could have called 10,000 angels to rule the world and set him free." And in my 7-year-old brain, something clicked that night and understood what it meant that Jesus loved me. And I had very few questions when it came to that. I understood then at that point that Jesus didn't just die because God had sent him down and told him that's what he was supposed to do, but that Jesus wanted to because of the love that he had for me. He chose to die for me. And that made sense. And I didn't have a whole lot of questions. I just knew that Jesus loved me and that I loved him and I wanted him to be my best friend forever. And so I made that decision to follow Jesus. But then as you get older, right, you begin to start to comprehend more abstract thoughts and you get to experience more of life. And as you go through life and you encounter these things that sometimes don't go super well, questions arise. And sometimes when those questions go unanswered, it leads to doubt. You see, we've all got questions. And thank goodness now we have Google, right? I mean, do you remember what we had to do before Google? I asked somebody this and they said, "Ask Jeeves." Does anybody remember that before Google came out? But before the internet, what did you have to do to find out information? Encyclopedias. Yeah, I was trying to Google what those books were called and I had no help with that. I finally had to ask a coworker, "What were those books that had all the information in them?" She's like, "Encyclopedias?" I was like, "That's it, yes. You got to go to encyclopedias." So I thought, man, I'm just interested to see, you know, Google will show you some of the top responses that people type in. And so I just typed in, "Does God?" And I just wanted to see what questions people were asking when it comes to God. And the top four responses that Google threw up was, "Does God love everyone? Does God forgive all sins? Does God hear the prayers of sinners? Does God love me?" Yeah, absolutely. We're done. No, I'm just kidding. I got way more to go. But it's interesting that all of the questions weren't about the existence of God, but about a relationship with God. And I was so fortunate growing up that I was surrounded by people who loved me and who cared about me and who wanted to invest in me, that as questions arose in my life, I was able to go to them and ask them, you know, the questions and the doubts that I was struggling with, and they were able to help me with so many of those. But sometimes, even as a young child, and especially middle school is one of my favorite ages because, man, they're thinking in ways that we haven't thought in years, right? And they just have the ability to see things in a new way. And I had some questions that maybe the people that loved me and cared about me and were trying to invest in me, they didn't know the answer to them either. And with their best intentions, they were trying to help, but instead of just going, "I don't know," they gave a response that was totally unhelpful. And maybe it's a response that you've heard yourself and maybe you've even used before, but it was this: "Hey, I don't know, but just have more faith." And that does nothing more than to shut down the question that you have and go, "Hey, you just need to forget about that and move forward." And maybe you've been there. Maybe you've had questions or you've had doubt and you've gone to somebody who cared about you and loved God and you were hoping they could shed some light on the situation and they gave you the same response, "Just have more faith." What does that even mean? How do you get more faith? I'm trying to discover this here. It's kind of like this. This past week, I walked down our stairs to our basement to get to our garage, and I smelled something. It wasn't a strong smell, but it was a wrong smell. And so I was like, "I wonder what that is." And, you know, what you do, you're in a rush, you know, get to work. And so I was like, "Just, it'll go away." Day two comes around, it's not going away. So you do what you're supposed to do when you have a bad smell. You spray Febreze. So I doused the basement with Febreze, thinking that whatever this is, it would go away soon. And by Thursday, it still was not gone, and it was getting stronger. And so at that point, you know what you've got to do for Febreze heavy duty, right? So used a whole bottle of that. It disappeared for a little bit. Saturday morning, walked down there, and something's not right. Something is really, really wrong in our basement. I don't know what it is. And the thought occurred to me, I wonder what's in the freezer. And the freezer had gotten unplugged at some point weeks and weeks and weeks before. I don't know when, I don't know who would do that, but I opened it up and there was a soup of all kinds of things that, it was really, really bad. It's in the yard now, soaking in Dawn for a few days to try to see if we can recover that, right? But it was horrible, right? And so when somebody tells you, hey, don't ask that question, hey, I don't know the answer to that question, hey, just have more faith, don't worry about it, it doesn't go away. Your questions, your doubts don't just magically disappear. They sit there and they fester. And just like that deep freeze got to be horrible, next time something happens that you don't understand, those unanswered questions resurface and they stink worse than they did before. And it goes from there and it leads to doubt. And you start to wonder, does God love me? Is God even involved in my life? Does he hear my prayers? And so maybe you're here this morning and when you made the decision to follow Jesus, you didn't have a lot of questions. But as you've gone through life and you've experienced a lot of things, maybe some of those questions you had still haven't gotten answered, or maybe you have new questions. Or maybe you're here this morning or watch it online and you've yet to make that decision to follow Jesus because you do have questions and you've got some doubts that you want to figure out before you make that leap to follow Jesus. I remember one of the first doubts I had when I was young, and it's going to seem so petty, but I remember it being so big to me as a young child. But I remember reading, and I was reading through my Bible, and I was trying to learn, and I got to John 14:13, and it says, I will do whatever you ask in my name. Oh, that sounds powerful to a young child. You could, whatever? So I decided to test this out. So as a good Alabama boy, I prayed for a four-wheeler. And after a few days, nothing showed up. And I thought, well, it says pray in specifically in his name. I specifically asked Jesus for this four-wheeler. And apparently my parents weren't listening either. I said it out loud so they could hear as well, just in case. But still nothing showed up. And I started to wonder, is God listening to me? Does he hear my prayers? Now, thankfully, again, I have parents who were able to explain that to me, and it made a whole lot more sense that it's not just like a genie in a bottle, but it's more about following Jesus and his, you know, in that relationship. But that was a big deal to me, right? Now, not all of our questions are that easy to answer. There are things that we experience in life that bring real questions and real doubt. Like maybe you were looking for a career change and something became available and you had prayed about this for a long time and it seemed like the perfect fit and everything was just lining up and then someone else got it. Or maybe within your family, you've experienced a crisis and it doesn't make sense. Maybe sickness or death has touched someone that you love and you've got real questions about it. Maybe you made a decision that's had some really heavy consequences and you're wondering, does God still love me? Is he still there? I've got some doubts now. And even though we want to have faith and we want to trust God, we find ourselves at this crossroads where it seems like the questions and the doubt are piling up and it's getting harder and harder to move forward. And I'm not going to pretend this morning to have simple answers for the questions that you have, but I do want to offer you this. There is hope. That in the midst of your questions and your doubts, God still loves you and it does not disqualify you from being able to be used by God. And so I want to show you some things this morning in Scripture to hopefully give you some hope. And the first thing we're going to start off in is in Psalm 88. And here's the thing that I want you to get. You are not alone in your questions and doubts. You're not alone in your questions and doubts. If we look at Psalm, it's so full of so many people who are going through difficult times. And in Psalm 88, verses 8 and 9, the psalmist says, "You have driven my friends away by making me repulsive to them. I am in a trap with no way of escape. My eyes are blinded by my tears. Each day I beg for your help, O Lord. I lift my hands to you for mercy." And this psalm is so raw and so real, and you get this real sense that the psalmist here is going through something extremely just difficult and tragic, and they're in a very, very dark place, and they feel very alone. But we hope that by the end of the psalm it gets better, but it doesn't. In verse 18, the psalmist simply closes out and says, "Darkness is my closest friend." And that's not super reassuring when you're going through something difficult, right? You don't want to read that. You're going, no, where's the happy ending that Disney promised? It's not there. And yet in that, it's kind of refreshing. It's kind of refreshing to realize that God doesn't expect us to go through life and that every day is just going to be happy-go-lucky. That God realizes and acknowledges that there are going to be some difficult times that we're going to have to go through. And the even better part of that is that our God is big enough to handle our fears, our questions, our frustrations, and yes, even our doubts. But not only in Psalm 88, but in Psalm 22, we hear David writes in verses 1 and 2. In Psalm 22, verse 2, he says, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me, so far from my cries of anguish? My God, I cry out by day, but you do not answer, by night, but I find no rest. Now that first verse may sound familiar because that is the exact line that Jesus said as he was on the cross. You see, even Jesus used the Psalms to express his pain and his grief, even as he was on the cross. Now this psalm takes a little bit of a different turn. First one, it's hopeless all the way through, but in this psalm, as you get to verses 23 and 24, the tone changes a little bit. And David says, you who fear the Lord, praise him. All you descendants of Jacob, honor him. Revere him, all you descendants of Israel. For he has not despised or scorned the suffering of the afflicted one. He has not hidden his face from him, but has listened to his cry for help. And even though in Psalm 22 he feels just as hopeless and abandoned, he turns to hope. You see, our doubt takes a lot of different forms. The questions, the doubts that we struggle with will look very different based off of who you are. In Psalm 88, it's dark. And even as the psalmist cries out to God, there's a sense of this losing hope, just hopelessness, really. But in Psalm 22, as the psalmist is writing, he feels abandoned and it feels like God is far away. But even throughout all that, in the midst of his questions and his doubts, there's still hope that God is faithful. There's still hope that God is going to pull through. You see, sometimes we doubt because we're in pain. Sometimes we doubt because we need to vent, or we're angry, or we're thinking through something and doubt creeps in. And sometimes we doubt because we have very real questions. Questions that we're really trying to find the answers to. And all these different forms are okay. Because I don't know what kind of doubts you've had in the past or what you were going through now or what you'll have in the future. But here's what I want you to know. That like every single follower of God and even Jesus, you are not alone. You are not alone in your questions and your doubts. You see, as long as you feel like you're alone in the questions and the doubts that you have, it gets very hopeless because you're going, I don't know if my relationship with God is going to make it through this. But you're not the only one to go through that. And when we understand that even in the midst of our questions and doubts, that it doesn't disqualify us from the love that God has for us or from even being used by God, we can move forward. And a matter of fact, we can find out that, hey, having questions is a natural thing. It's a faith-building thing. The way that God designed us is to ask questions. Part of asking why is the way that God designed us to be able to think about and think through and to make a good decision, a good reason for why we have faith. And so it doesn't disqualify us. And it doesn't mean that you don't have faith just because you have questions or doubts. And once we understand that we're not alone, we can begin to work through those. And once we learn that we're not alone and that God still loves us and it doesn't disqualify us from being used by God, we can move forward. In the midst of our questions and doubts, we can still be used by God because our God is so much bigger than we think. You're not alone in your questions and doubts. But secondly is this, and this is just as important, God doesn't shame us for our doubts. I think one of the best examples of this would be Thomas, who has the nickname Doubting Thomas. So that's a great one to go to, right? So in John chapter 20, verses 24 through 29, it says, one of the 12 disciples, Thomas, nicknamed the twin, was not with the others when Jesus came. And they told him, we have seen the Lord. But he replied, wait, I won't believe it unless I see the nail wounds in his hands, put my fingers into them, and place my hand into the wound in his side. 8 days later, the disciples were together again, and this time Thomas was with them. The doors were locked, but suddenly, as before, Jesus was standing among them. "Peace be with you," he said. And then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here and look at my hands. Put your hand into the wound in my side. Don't be faithless any longer. Believe." "My Lord and my God," Thomas exclaimed. And then Jesus told him, "You believe because you have seen me. Blessed are those who believe without seeing me." You see, what's happened here is that they've been following Jesus, and then all of a sudden, this man that they thought was God was murdered. And so they think, "Well, goodness, I think it's over now." They're scared. They're confused. They might even be a little bit embarrassed. I mean, were we tricked into believing that? I mean, we thought he wasn't just a man, but he was also God, but now he's been killed. How can this be? He was going to save us. And then all of a sudden, 3 days later, Jesus comes back to life. Dead people don't come back to life. That doesn't happen, right? And so Jesus appears to all the disciples except for Thomas. And they say, "Listen, we've seen Jesus." And Thomas goes, "Well, there's no way. Dead people don't come back to life. Unless I can put my fingers in his wounds and touch his side, there's no way I'm going to believe any of you." Kind of gross, right? Touching wounds and stuff. But he was like, "There's no way that this can happen." And then Jesus shows up, and after he shows up in a locked room, right, and he says, "Peace with you," the very next thing that he does is look to Thomas. And I think it's so interesting that he approaches Thomas right there. And does he shame him for not believing right away? Does he scold him for going, "Why did it take you so long? Why couldn't you just believe?" No. No. Does he punish him? Does he get angry at him? No. What does he do? He says, "Come here. If this is what it's going to take, put your hands on my hands and touch my side." He did exactly what Thomas said he needed to believe. And he said, "But blessed are those who haven't seen and yet still believe." But God doesn't shame you for the questions and the doubts that you have. He's right there with you. We all have different personalities, and that means that we approach our relationship with Jesus a little bit differently, right? Some of us are extroverted. Some of us are introverted, right? We need people in small doses. Some of us like to take charge, and others are fine with being support. And some people are pretty mellow and laid back, and others are easily excited. And some are more, logic-based, and they work off of facts and thoughts. And other people are more intuition and emotion-driven. And none of those are better or worse than the others, but they're just different. And this is why we don't all struggle with the same questions and doubts. I mean, if you are more feelings-oriented, you tend to experience God through emotions and intuition. And if you're more logic-driven, then you typically experience God through thoughts and processes and reason. And that's why we don't all have the same questions. But God doesn't shame you for where you are with the questions that you have. Because even in the midst of our questions and doubts, it doesn't disqualify us from the love of God or from being used by God. And thirdly, God doesn't always answer our questions the way that we want. In Job 1:1, it says, "There once was a man named Job who lived in the land of Uz, and he was blameless, a man of complete integrity. He feared God and stayed away from evil." Now, the book starts out intentionally saying that Job was blameless because at that time the Jewish people thought, hey, if something bad happens to you, it's because you did something to deserve it. And the book starts out intentionally, Job did nothing to deserve this. And we don't have time to read through the entire book of Job, but if you do, you see that God is bragging on Job. That Job is a blameless man who loves God and loves his family, and he is respectful. And Satan comes up and goes, "Yeah, he's not that great." God goes, "No, Job is different. He, there's something special about him." And Satan goes, "Yeah, but he's got it easy. He's rich. He's got everything he could ever want. Anybody can love you if they've got the stuff." Satan says, "Let me take it all away from him." And God gives him permission to do everything but to kill Job. And so Satan takes his possessions, his children, and his health. And Job is broke, experiencing sorrow and loss, dealing with a health condition now, and yet he doesn't curse God. His wife tells him to give up, just curse God and die. You're miserable. His friends, as well-intentioned and friends who were trying to help, tell him all kinds of different responses from, hey, bud, just suck it up because you obviously did something wrong. Your kids deserved it. They were terrible. Or maybe this is just God's plan. That's not super helpful when you're going through something, you know, very difficult, though. And even one of them comes up and says, well, listen, you know, obviously you did something wrong and it could be worse. So just be thankful it's not any worse. Okay? They don't put those in cards often for a reason, all right? And so Job cries out to God and he goes, I don't understand. This doesn't make sense. God, why? Why have you allowed these things to happen? I mean, even you have said that I'm blameless and yet all these terrible things have happened. This does not make sense to me. And God responds, and you should take some time to read it, and it's not what Job expected. God doesn't answer the why. Basically, what God says is, I'm the creator of everything, and I'm so much bigger than you thought I was. And even though God doesn't answer the why, Job gets something even better. He gets an encounter with his creator, and that was enough for him. That used to frustrate me so much. Like, God, just tell me the why. I'm a black and white logic person. I don't need the emotion with it. Just tell me what's up. And sometimes it still frustrates me as I go through something that doesn't make sense or I go through something that's hard to work through. God, it doesn't make sense. That I don't understand this. What's the logic behind it? But it's so interesting that clarity for Job and for Thomas wasn't when all of their questions were answered. It was when they encountered Jesus. That's when things changed. Now, I'm not telling you that you shouldn't seek answers for your questions. Faith is not blindly following something just because somebody told you to. Faith is having a good reason for what you believe. And I said it earlier, God has put in us the desire to ask why and to dive into our faith and to discover more about what it means. And that's awesome. But even when God doesn't answer the way that we want, he's still in control and he's still faithful. And he still loves you. And it doesn't disqualify you from being used by God. So what does this mean if you're here as a follower this morning and you've got questions? I read an article by Kerry Newhoff a while back, and he had three responses to this that I think are so great, and I just want to wrap it up with this. Number one is this, is you can belong and still have doubt. The church is full of people who have doubt, and in the midst of that have very real faith, still following Jesus. That response we talked about earlier of just have more faith, it's bad theology. You see, telling somebody who's got questions, just have more faith, puts it on them. God's response to our questions and our doubt has nothing to do with our worthiness and everything to do with God's great mercy. So we got to eliminate that from our vocabulary. I don't know is better than have more faith. And God may not answer your questions right now, but don't let that disqualify you from being used by God right now, because he's so much bigger. But what if you're holding off on following Jesus because of the questions and the doubt that you have? Well, belonging can lead to belief. Belonging can lead to belief. Matthew 28, 16 and 17, we see that the disciples, they have seen Jesus. They've been walking with Jesus for years now. Jesus was killed. They thought he was gone. He comes back to life. They've had breakfast with a dead man who's back alive. It doesn't make sense. Jesus is about to ascend back into heaven. And we see this in verse 16 and 17. It says, and then the 11 disciples left for Galilee, going to the mountain where Jesus had told them to go. And when they saw him, they worshiped him, but some of them doubted. They had gotten all the proof they could have gotten, and yet some of them doubted still. And yet every single one of those 11 disciples went on to do amazing things for the sake of Jesus. Your questions and your doubts don't disqualify you from the love of God and being used by God. And then lastly, you can belong and still have doubt. Belonging can lead to belief. And everyone who believes can become someone new. You see, being around other believers sometimes is the best way to get answers to our questions. The way that they see things, or sometimes not the way that we see things. I know times in my life I was struggling with, you know, I felt like God wanted me to be a pastor, but I didn't know what that meant. I'm not sure if that's really what he was talking about. And I remember talking to a friend that I was a follower of Jesus, and he just put it in a whole new way that made so much more sense to me. And this question and doubts that I was wrestling with was all of a sudden answered because I belonged. As a student pastor, we had a lot of amazing volunteers, and one of those volunteers was this college student, and she made a decision to follow Jesus in middle or high school years. And after that, she was trying to decide about baptism, but she was raised in a family where she was baptized as an infant. And so she struggled with this idea of, well, do I need to be baptized again? And so we talked about, you know, that baptism doesn't save you, right? But it's an outward symbol of an inward change in you, and that's, you know, it's part of just obedience. She goes, well, if it doesn't save me, then I don't know. And so she just struggled with that. But it didn't stop her from being used by God. She invested in our teenagers, and we went on a mission trip one summer with all of our students, and we were at a local college and would stay there and then go out into places in the city. And they were in an apartment complex and serving people, and the conversations she struck up with someone led to her sharing about Jesus with this person who was struggling with that, and was just at the right moment, the right time, she led this lady to Jesus, and it was awesome. And then she said, well, what do I do now? I said, well, you need to be baptized. It's an, you know, it's an act of obedience. It's an outward expression of an inward change that's happened in you. And so we worked with the apartment complex, and they were going to get a big feeding trough so we could baptize the lady the next day. And that night she came to me and she goes, I'm telling other people they need to be baptized, and yet I haven't even done it myself. I need to be baptized. So I was like, all right, well, how is this going to work out? And so we got in touch with the college where we were staying, and they had a big pool, and they let us take our whole youth group in there. And that night, I got to baptize her, and then the next day, she baptized the lady that she had led to Jesus. You see, there were doubts, real questions that she had, but she didn't let it stop her from being used by God. It's okay. You're not alone in the questions and the doubts that you have. God doesn't shame you for the questions and the doubts that you have. But God doesn't always answer the way that we want. Sometimes it's wait, sometimes it's not yet, sometimes it's not in this life. But God is so much bigger than we ever thought.